We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, guys, welcome in to another BuzzBeat episode. Just a reminder, we are a proud member of the Blue Wire Network, where you can find us along with other sports podcasts. Like I've mentioned before, there's probably 15 or so podcasts on the network, and it is growing. If you stumbled upon us, whether you guys were just searching for Hornets podcast or you found us through Blue Wire and you want to know a little bit more about the show, we are a Charlotte Hornets podcast. And I feel like in our episodes, we do a good job of breaking down the games, discussing team trends, X's and O's. Feel that you can't find a better Hornets analysis podcast out there. So if you like our episodes, we'd really appreciate a 5-star rating and a quick review on iTunes. It takes all but 30 seconds to do. All right, guys, in this episode, we're going to discuss the depressing loss against the Los Angeles Lakers on Saturday. Feels like an eternity ago. So we won't spend too much time on that game, but there are definitely some topics that we need to discuss. And then also the win over the Cavaliers on Wednesday night. And then we might also get into some Kemba talk at the end and maybe anything that we feel like the Hornets may do around the trade deadline, which is really not too far away. So let's first start off with the Saturday game. So coming off a loss to the Knicks, the Hornets were hoping to beat LeBron James and the Lakers. But Charlotte's record entering this game against James was 6-46. And then there was another loss after that 128-100 loss on Saturday. The first half, it was very deceiving. We were only down by 7, but it felt like we should have been down by a whole lot more. Lakers in full control of this game. Hornets really never threatened. And it was a very pitiful game to watch as a Hornets fan. Definitely very negative thoughts that raced through my head. And I'm glad that we actually were able to see them get a win on Wednesday night so that this podcast isn't too negative. So I guess we'll first start off talking about some of the, you know, the themes in this game. Kemba struggled again. Lakers had a ton of fast break points coming off Charlotte's 18 turnovers. Really, the only bright spots in this game were Malik Monk, who had 19 points, and Miles Bridges, who had, I believe, is a career high of 17. So I guess I first want to start with Kemba's slump. And, you know, going against Lonzo Ball, who's definitely a pest on the defensive end, it didn't make it easy. He was 2-for-13 from the field. He had his lowest point total of the season at 4 and his lowest true shooting percentage of the season at 15.4. I guess all players go through slumps, but the problem when Kemba goes through a slump, and Brian brings up this point all the time, there's not a lot of people around him that actually step up. So on his off nights, others have to step up. And that's just not happening, and that didn't happen at the Lakers either. So any thoughts or takeaways on this game, or maybe specifically with Kemba's slump and others around him just not stepping up?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, you know, we make the point quite a bit of, you know, when Kemba's not, when he doesn't have it going, I mean, there's just not enough firepower, you know, on this team offensively to, you know, to stay above water. And this Los Angeles game was like 1A example, right, for how bad this team actually is. Like, take Kemba out of the equation, and this is, like, one of the three worst teams in the league, if not the worst team in the league. You know, and it's crazy to think about for a 500 ball club, but it's true. I mean, this was Kemba's easily his worst game of the season. You made a great point, Richie, how good Lonzo Ball – I mean, Lonzo Ball looks healthy now. His athleticism is obvious. You know, the defender he's been since he's gotten into the league surprised me a little bit, but this was a great this is great tape for Lonzo Ball and his defensive potential against Kemba Walker. Yeah, go ahead.
Couple dunks on the other end too. Like he looked bouncy, you know, really for the first probably three dunks this game. He looked athletic, no doubt.
Yeah, he did. And look, like on the opposite end of the spectrum, Kemba looked exhausted. And he looked almost, you know, sometimes Kemba looks uninterested, and especially, and he's not, but his body language just kind of spells that out from time to time. But, you know, he gets in this funk where he's not making shots, his mentality isn't great, his confidence isn't high. And then on top of all that, he feels like he's not getting the whistle. And when he starts talking to the official more, and Richie, you've brought this up a lot, that's when you know he's not focused, he's not tuned in, things aren't going his way. The reality of that, I actually looked into this today, the reality is Kemba is still getting the whistle. I was surprised to see it, but I did the research a little bit today. In the month of December, 8 games, he's actually getting to the foul line more, 3 times a game than a season average. And he's also driving the ball to the basket less. So, you know, that's just a myth that Kim is not getting the whistle. But it also proves the point I was just making, that it is his perception. When things are going his way, he starts acting out more out of emotion more and more when he's not getting to the foul line. And we've seen that a lot here recently with Kemba. And again, it's just never a good sign with him.
Yeah, I even think during the going to the Cleveland game a few nights later, when things weren't looking so good in the first half and he was sort of chirping at the refs again. I mean, Del Curry sort of found nicer words to use, a little more flowery language, but he brought up, like, even he sort of mentioned, like, hey, you know, I'd like to see Kemba maybe just sort of just play and not worry about, just sort of pick and choose his spots when they yell at the refs more than he sort of is right now. But, yeah, like, this game, I mean, come on. The Hornets against LeBron is sort of a joke every time they play. Like, it doesn't even matter how good or bad Kemba is. But if he's going to struggle, and boy, did he struggle in this game, 0-5 on pull-up threes, only 2 field goal attempts at the rim. Charlotte scores only 78 points per 100 possessions with him on the court. Like, the Hornets would lose to any – they'd lose to Duke if they played like that. You know, I'm obviously being a little facetious here, but, like, they're never going to win that way. And to do it on the second night of a back-to-back against LeBron, like – the problem for me with this Lakers game was, I think you could have, if Friday night against the Knicks hadn't been such a disaster,
right,
then this wouldn't have been such a big deal. And like, it was just sort of like the timing of it. And again, like, you know, the Lakers are really good. They might be the third or fourth best team in the Western Conference. Hell, they might be the second best team in the Western Conference. So there's no shame in losing to them and LeBron, who just routinely murders the Hornets or the Bobcats every time they play. But it coming less than 24 hours after the collapse against the New York Knicks and the vaunted 2-3 zone of David Fizdale, it was a bad weekend basically in Uptown for the Hornets. Like, because if you win that game against the Knicks, you've got 4 wins in a row.
Yeah,
and you got the next game against Cleveland, you're like, hell, unless barring a disaster, we're going to win 5 out of 6 here. It's pretty good. And there's no problem with losing to LeBron, even if it is at home, if you're on the second night of a back-to-back and at a rest disadvantage. But, boy, the effort wasn't even there. It's just the box score is just sort of weird. Kemba didn't even attempt a free throw in this game. Hornets turned the ball over a lot, 19% turnover rate. Like, again, they're always going to lose if they turn the ball over like that. Like, they are net. Like, this team has to be at that, unless they go crazy from 3, which they didn't. Just no. 7 of 29. Like, this was just this game was a recipe for disaster for the Hornets. With the exception that, hey, the young guys Monk and Bridges played pretty well, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the Hornets, you know, they are number 1 in the NBA and in turnover percentage, or at least limiting turnover percentage. And then this game, it was the complete opposite. Like you said, Brian, if you have these games where you turn the ball over, especially against a team like the Lakers who thrive in transition, you really have no chance. You have no chance. The Lakers had 20 points off turnovers. That's the 5th most Charlotte has given up all season. Lakers had 25 fast break points. That's the third most Charlotte has given up all season. And then Lakers had 66 points in the paint. Obviously, some of those are coming off of those fast break points. That's the most Charlotte has given up all season. So Lakers definitely thrived off the turnovers, something that Charlotte is typically good at, but not on this night. And the Lakers took full advantage of that. And they even shot 78% within 4 feet of the hoop, which is the second highest on the year for the Lakers. And I noticed a lot of like quick touch passes, and they had tons of alley-oops in this game, the Lakers, that is. And it just seems like we had no chance. We were always behind the ball, not Lonzo Ball per se, but the actual ball on the court. So I don't know. You know, not a lot of positives. I don't know if anyone wants to speak to, you know, Miles Bridges' play or Malik Monk's play. They did have a little bit of a spark in the second quarter where the Hornets went on a 17-6 run. Bridges wasn't the most efficient, but he did get up 17 points. And then Monk shot pretty well from the field. And I think the biggest thing with Monk, I've said this a couple times, but just kind of finding that balance with attacking and then shooting from behind the arc. If he's strictly shooting from behind the arc, which is typically the way that he goes, if he favors one side, it's not him always attacking, it's him taking those shots. It typically doesn't end up well. So I thought he did a good job of kind of balancing at the hoop and then from also behind the arc. He was 3 of 5 within 5 feet.
Yeah, well, a few things. Number one, the turnovers, you know, it was consistent throughout the game. It came in a few different waves. The first one was, you know, the Kimba Cody pick and roll was, I mean, everything was a power outage for Kimba in this game, but Cody couldn't catch passes. Live ball turnovers led to transition points in the first half. And then it continued in the second half. I thought especially Malik Monk, just like two of the most boneheaded, I mean, he does a lot of boneheaded stuff, but those second half live ball turnovers were just, sometimes I just do not understand what's going through that guy's head. His basketball IQ is just continues to be.
This is the same guy that didn't wear his jersey that one game. Remember when he tried to come onto the game and he didn't have his jersey?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like the shooting numbers, okay, fine. They are what they are in this game, but like I just don't add much weight into that because so much of this game was garbage time. And, you know, a lot of those points, not a lot. I mean, in fact, only, I guess, 8 or 9 of those points came in garbage time. And I know they had that second quarter, but like, I don't know, man. And I'm going to do something for Queen City Hoops every Friday for the rest of the season, a kind of a column of things I'm seeing, and Monk's going to be part of it tomorrow. And there's just, guys, there's zero sign that this guy's getting it at all. It just continues. And I look, he doesn't turn 21 until February. It's not time to give up. But there is very, very little in the pie to suggest that he is developing as an NBA player. So I'm worried. The other point I wanted to make is Miles Bridges in this game. The Hornets went small when they got desperate there in that second quarter. Kemba, Tony Parker, Monk, Batum, and Miles, a lineup I'm not sure we had seen yet this season.
We had not, no.
Yeah, so that was interesting. Borrego just continues to dig into the bag. And the Lakers left JaVale McGee on the floor and literally he ignored Miles Bridges no matter where he was on the court. And that's some of the reason the Hornets were able to get back in that game. Miles Bridges scored 9 straight points in that stretch.
I thought he did a great job. Zach Lowe's talked about this a few times now with regard to Jared Allen in Brooklyn, of these centers that are just playing defensive center field, just going to park it at the rim. DeAndre Jordan's doing it in Dallas. But if they think they're playing like a non-shooting threat, like they're just going to hang out. They're not going to worry about chasing dudes out 25 feet from the hoop, and they're just going to wall off the rim. And for the Lakers, who are concerned about giving up looks at the rim, it's great to have a guy like JaVale McGee that's blocking a ton of shots this year hanging back. But I thought Miles did a really nice job going at him and hitting some shots over the top too. He's one of those guys where it's like you see – again, I don't want to do like – angel on one shoulder with Miles Bridges and devil on the other shoulder with Malik Monk. They're both young players, clearly with a lot of talent. And Bridges definitely has games where, like, you know, you're like, man, you're just so spacey defensively. Or even in Cleveland, he had another time where he got a rebound and started dribbling up the court and then picked up his dribble along the sideline right around half court and got trapped and turned the ball over. But it's like, you can kind of live with him a little bit because he's with some of those mistakes because, A, he's a rookie and he's only 20 years old. But because, like, man, he just makes up for it because you can see the, like, the gears in his head sort of turning. You can see Tony Parker pulling him aside. And you can see him, like, I don't know if you're going to see the tangible results of this until maybe next season or beyond. But it's like you can see the gears in that guy's head working. Like, okay, I effed up here. Now, you know, how can I get it back on the other end? Or how can I not do that again? And I'm not trying to juxtapose those two as, like, Bridges good, Monk bad, because there's positive and positives and negatives of both. But
well, and the usage rate for Miles is much, much less than Monk, so the bleeding just isn't as catastrophic.
Yeah,
you know, when the mistakes come, and I think that there's a chance that's what Miles is as a player, right? He's a I'm going to attack a closeout, I'm going to shoot an open three, and I'm going to play off the ball, and then just be a menace on the offensive glass and on the defensive end if he can get there, right? But like Monk has to travel so much farther than that to develop into the even a general idea of this player that people think he could be. I mean, the CJ McCollum comparison was the one we were making for him as a rookie. Like, I just look again, let's be patient, but I don't see any of it. None of it. So I don't know what he is as an NBA player. It's like I'm trying to reinvent my idea of what he can be, but I can't really come up with anything. And that's why I really worry.
Do you think that the physical limitations on Monk's part, because he's a shooting guard in a point guard's body, he doesn't look too built to me. So he has to kind of make up for a lot of his physical limitations, where Miles Bridges, you look at him, he's definitely a modern day 3-4. He can switch across multiple positions. Does that play a factor in kind of your outlook for Malik Monk? I mean, I know it's also the mental makeup and come, you know, some of the dumb mistakes he makes on offense and just his defensive, you know, letdowns. But I feel like the physical limitations with Blake Monk, he has a lot to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, yes, no question that has a ton to do with it. And, you know, like I just said, CJ McCollum, okay, it's pretty clear he's not going to be that, or there's a pretty good chance he's not. So now let's take it down a notch and let's say, okay, can he be a Lou Williams? Can he be a Jamal Crawford? That microwave score. But the problem is he's a very inefficient scorer on almost everywhere on the basketball court. So no, it's like every question you ask yourself about what he is versus what he's going to become spits you out in this really depressing area. And again, he's not 21 yet, so we're not putting a label on him, but we've got 1400 minutes of data of evidence here that really doesn't tell us much optimistic stuff about Malik Monk.
The things I'll say, quick thoughts I'm just running through my head here. The comparison with McCollum, you got to really squint if you want to see it. You also got to remember, too, with McCollum, we've actually talked about this on the podcast before, too, but, like, that dude was a 3 or 4 year player at Lehigh in college, and it took him, like, until the playoffs of his third season in Portland before, like, the light bulb came on. Now he's been a total badass since then, but, like, he probably didn't figure stuff out until he was 25, 26, and, you know, Malik Monk, as we've just said multiple times now, like, he doesn't turn 21 until February. So, like, look, you know, it's one of those things where, hell, I don't know if he'll be in Charlotte when he's that age, but that is something to consider. The thing that I was always going to hang my hat on with being optimistic about Malik Monk was, obviously, you could see the limitations in terms of his size, his length, just like his defensive acumen. I just thought the shooting was going to be able to offset everything. Mm-hmm. And he's just been an okay catch and shoot guy, not great. 37% on catch and shoot threes this year, 3.5 attempts per game. It's not, you know, he feels like a guy that's got to be like, you know, closer to 40%. And the pull up threes, just 27% on pull up threes, about 1.5 attempts per game. And it's the shot selection too. It's like he has moments where you can see like he's got some twitch. He has a hand. He has some handle. Like he can be an unselfish player and pass with vision on lobs or on bounce passes to guys cutting from the weak side. But, like, I always thought the shooting was going to be able to offset some of these physical limitations he had.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. And it just hasn't. And, like, that's sort of like the game that Portland runs with Lillard and McCollum. And in my pie-in-the-sky vision, I thought Charlotte with Kemba and Malik Monk could try to do some East Coast version of that. And it just, without the shot being reliably there, and part of that is because he likes to over-dribble and he takes bad shots and he just doesn't make, he misses the vast majority of them. Yeah. It just, that's really, now because of that, it even heightens these limitations that he has in terms of his frame.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll add that from a creation standpoint with Malik, I think the biggest issue with him is he only has one speed that he can go right now, and that is 100 trillion miles per hour, you know, with really no plan. And that's where these awful turnovers come from, is he gets into the lane.
He goes all the way to the baseline and just makes, like, this pass out.
And then, you're right, and he leaves his feet. You know, this is with stuff we talk about in JV basketball. If you're stuck, don't leave your feet, because now you've made gravity the sixth defender on the floor, right? Mm-hmm. So, and when he has this habit where he leaves his feet, like you said, Richie, he'll throw it back towards his basket, you know, and you get these live ball turnovers. There's two of them in the Lakers game where you're just like, what is going on? Here's the other thing. We're now – the clock is officially ticking for Malik and the Hornets, because we're now about 20 months away from him being extension eligible. Mm-hmm. And about 2 years exactly to the deadline of whether the Hornets are going to extend him. They had to make this decision with MKG. They did. They had to make this decision with Kemba Walker. They did. They had to make this decision with Cody Zeller. They did. They'll have to make this in less than 2 years with Malik Monk, or send him into restricted free agency.
Yeah.
That is not that far away.
I would just say, unless things change in one way or the other, like, you just let this guy hit restricted free. Like, this is a guy that you play hardball with, unless he really shows you some. And again, he's got a lot. Like, between years 2 and 3, you can make a jump. Like, you can still. That's even those that are down on Malik, and I'm not putting myself in that category just yet. Even those people have to acknowledge, like, yeah. But there's still a possibility that he could make a jump. Everyone was throwing this comparison is trite because they were teammates at Kentucky. They operate totally independently of one another. But, like, everybody was crushing De'Aaron Fox in Sacramento. And, like, look what that guy's become. Now, Malik Monk is not De'Aaron Fox. I'm not at all saying that. And, again, comparison is a little weak because I'm just grabbing another 20-year-old guard that he happened to be teammates with in college for a year. So I think there's still upward growth, and, you know, maybe getting to be around Parker and Kemba and having James Borrego, sort of knowing that if his tenure is going to be, like, you know, if he wants to sort of, like, increase his odds of his tenure in Charlotte being good or what it could be, then he sort of needs Malik to be there. So, you know, the organization's going to give him chances and stuff like that. But yeah, it is becoming, it's just like the thought that in the summer of, you know, 2020, you know, like, unless things change crazily, like, they're not going to be trying to, like, why the hell would you be trying to extend this guy? Like, you still don't even know what he is. And then one last thing, just to go back to Bridges real quickly here too, was the problems that you have with Malik Monk when it comes to shot selection, you don't have with Miles Bridges. And again, they're different players. They're asked to do different things, but Miles Bridges, man, over 80% of his field goal attempts this season have been threes or at the rim.
Yep.
That's a perfect number. 43% of his field goal attempts at the rim. He's shooting 73% on those, 41% on the corner, 13% of his shot attempts have come from there, 32% on above the break threes. You know, it's just really, like, not that bad. And so that is encouraging, because he's being, like, you know, he pops and he does these amazing moments of athleticism on a rebound or in transition or whatever. But, like, he's also playing the right way offensively. And, you know, he takes what the defense gives him, and he's just taking the right kinds of shots too, which is encouraging.
And I think that's the thing with Monk. He doesn't necessarily play the right way all the time, and more frequently than not, it's not. Like, he's not taking the best shots, and you made a great point, Brian, that his shots or his shooting efficiency has to be what gets him over that hump, and it just hasn't been the case. And yes, he surprised us with his passing ability, although that does lead to some turnovers, but it's definitely going to be something that the Hornets have to look within and see if they are trying to keep Monk for the long haul. But let's kind of transition to the Wednesday 110-99 win over the Cavaliers. This was definitely a game that I felt like Charlotte needed to get after a pretty pathetic performance in the first half. First, I would say maybe first you know, 1.5 quarters, I would say. The Hornets kind of turned it around at the end of that second quarter. Marvin Williams, Jeremy Lamb, and Kemba Walker. He could be breaking out of that slump. He had an awesome performance from that second quarter onwards. Those three, Lamb, Kemba, and Marvin Williams, accounted for 66 of the points, and they went 27 of 55 from the field. They basically were able to get whatever they wanted at the rim. Cavaliers did not do a good job of protecting the paint. Charlotte outscored the Cavaliers 60-42 inside the paint. And like I said, this is a game that they needed to get, especially after losing to the Knicks prior to the Lakers. We had to stop the bleeding, and the Hornets are back at 500 with this win. I guess I kind of want to start with Kemba. I think the biggest thing is he needed a game like this to get out of that slump. He was very inefficient from the first quarter. The whole team was. I think that might have been a season low in points, if I'm not mistaken.
It was for the first quarter. Yeah, correct.
And I just thought, okay, here we go. Another game where Kemba struggles and no one else kind of steps up around him. But I will say that around the 5-minute mark in the second quarter, Kemba made a reverse layup, and from that point on, he scored all 30 of his points. It went 11 of 19 from the field, 50% from three-point range, and he also had the pull-up mid-range working as well. That's always an aspect of his game that I feel like when he has that going, it kind of puts the defenses on their heels a whole lot more. So he's got the pull-up mid-range game working, shooting well from deep. He still needs to prove at the rim and kind of limit the complaining. He did pick up a technical. You know, that frustration was building. But do we think that Kemba is back, I guess, or is escaping that slump, or is one game not enough to say that?
Yeah,
not against this team.
Yeah, that's true.
I would agree. I think that, you know, and I dug into Kemba's really December, just this month, which is 8 games. And I agree with Brian. Not against Cleveland. They're so pathetic keeping the ball in front of them. When you have Jordan,
what an absolute joke.
Who's that?
This team. I mean,
Clarkson
is, but like this whole team. I mean, you guys were watching that game last night, it was like, I don't know if maybe you felt the same way, but you're just like, it's almost hard not to just like either. You're like, I'm like a combination of like, I want to laugh at them, and I'm also disgusted that there's a professional basketball team that looks like this, and they should lose every game. I know they just beat the Pacers. I know that, you know, they had Larry Nance tipping at the buzzer. Woohoo! If any of the other 29 teams, and I'm even talking about crap teams like the Knicks and like the Hawks, like if those teams just come out and play a professional basketball game, they will beat the Cavaliers should lose every time. This team, especially without Tristan Thompson, like, if you can just, like, some of those games, Hood and Clarkson are going to get hot and throw in some slop. And if you can just not get frustrated by that, you should beat this team just senselessly every time. They're so bad.
Yeah, they're terrible keeping the ball in front of them. That's why the Hornets scored 60 points in the paint last night. I mean, Rodney Hood, he looks like he should be a good defender. He's not. Jordan Clarkson, in my opinion, is the worst defender in the league. I mean, he's got to be up there.
He took 19 shots last night.
Oh, of course he did. I'm surprised.
What are we doing here, actually? Yeah.
Well, we're trying to lose is what we're doing.
Yeah.
So the last 8 games for Kemba, he's 34% from the floor. He's 27% from behind the arc. 16 of 40, 40% from the restricted area. That's very surprising for Kemba. 17 of 62, that's 27.5% from above the break. Triples, that's really where he butters his bread, I mean, to be honest. And that's concerning. Let's see here. He was 52% and 37% from these areas, you know, respectively, at the rim, above the break three, in the first 22 games of the season. So, you know, I think that's the sample, the month of December, the 8 games. I'm going to just monitor that as we move forward here. But Kemba is, you know, the second half against Cleveland does not break this slump. Although, Richie, you ask a good question, make a good point, right? Because he started this game 0 of 7. So you're sitting there going, holy crap, what is this about to become?
Yeah.
You know, what is this about to become? And he makes that reverse layup, and then he hits two or three, you know, those mid-range, you know, step side, step backs, and then he gets the pull-up three, right? So he just, like, worked his way back on the floor, and then Charlotte was kind of rolling. And It's so funny. And this is basketball. This is any team sport, right? With a guy who everyone counts on as the leader of the team, is the best player. Really doesn't matter. It's just so it's so funny to watch the other guys on this team when Kemba gets it going and the body language just immediately becomes freer. I mean, it's just like a weight has been lifted off the collective shoulders of the Spectrum Center. And Charlotte just really could not, didn't look back after Kemba got going. Marvin gets it going to the rim. MKG, his play really, in my opinion, is what turned this game. It wasn't Kemba getting going. He came out, he got a few defensive stops, one steal, cutting off the baseline, protecting the rim. I think he was matched up against who I can't remember right now, but really he inserted the energy, I thought, in this game, and then came in, got it going, shooting the ball, and then in this game really turned for Charlotte.
MKG always seems to be around the ball, whether it's like defensively, loose balls, offensive rebounds, whatever it is. It just seems like the ball finds him or he finds the ball, and he is definitely an underrated or underappreciated part of this team that most people don't see. You know, you look at the box score and you'll think Kemba, Lamb, and Marvin Williams for this game. But MKG definitely impressed me in terms of kind of upping that energy. But he definitely is like a magnet for that ball. He always finds that ball.
No, he knows where his bread is buttered. And it's just like being active and playing hard as hell and being 6'7" and flying around trying to make plays. And like, you know, holy hell, dude, that's exactly what he did. 6 of 10 shooting in this game, 6 offensive rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks, like four stocks in this game. That's great. He contested 8 two-point field goal attempts in 21 minutes. He's been a menace, basically the best wing defender at contesting two-point attempts so far this year, if you want to lump him into the wing defender category. I thought Jeremy Lamb was big in this game too. Uh-huh. 10 of his 16 field goal attempts in the restricted area. He played 42 minutes, which is like kind of a joke. It's like, well, how did you need him to play 42 minutes against the freaking Cavaliers?
Borrego really shrunk that lineup last. Only 8 guys played.
He did. And I mean, basically we're at a point now. I wanted to bring this up too. Like, you know, did Hernan Gomez and Kaminsky, did they even play in the second half last night?
They did not.
Like, so we're at a point now where it's like, you know, if there were a game tonight, I mean, obviously one of those guys, if not both of them, would play, but they both got some minutes against Cleveland. Like, right now, the second best center and the effective backup center on the Hornets is Marvin Williams.
So,
like, period.
So I don't want to like dive too deep into this because I want you guys to read my column, Quincy Hooks and everybody else tomorrow. But I did a little bit of a deep dive on the whole Willie Kaminsky, you know, musical chairs of backup center. And whoa, there are some really shocking – well, not, I wouldn't even say they're shocking, but the numbers with those guys on the floor, either one of them, when MKG is playing power forward and then when he comes off, are so – it is such a steep cliff. You can't even hardly believe it.
This is what I brought up with on the pod with Nate Duncan last week. Like when Frank Kaminsky's on the court without MKG, it was as of a week ago 107 points per 100 possessions. With MKG on with Frank, it was 84 points per 100 possessions. Like a night and day difference. And by the way, like the lineups with Marvin at center. Look, maybe you're sort of nuking him. You know, this is a lot to put on Marvin's plate here. But 164 minutes with Marvin as the five this year, Hornets plus like 40 something in those minutes, 110 points per 100 possessions, allowing under 98 points per 100 possessions, a net rating of plus 12.3. Like they've been very good lineups with him at center and playing with, you know, usually MKG, sometimes Miles Bridges at the four. Like they've been very, very productive. And that's becoming the like, when Borrego sees things going like sideways early, it's either the let me throw Tony Parker in there with Kemba Walker or let me go to Marvin at center. Those are his two like
go-tos.
I've got to do something now because everything's going poorly and Cody's on the bench because he needs rest or fouls or whatever. So I've just got to go with this other thing.
We should probably talk about this with Borrego in terms of just kind of limiting and kind of shrinking the lineup a little bit. First off, Monk didn't even play. He had a DNP CD. So after this game and, you know, against the Lakers where he put up 19 points, clearly Borrego favors defense, and he didn't even get a single minute out there on the court against the Cavaliers. You would think he would get a minute against the Cavaliers. So I don't know if something happened at practice or if he doesn't want him out there.
Yeah.
But it kind of goes along with the trend with Willie and Frank Kaminsky. Add those two plus Monk. What do they all have in common? They can't play defense.
I don't think it's really anything off the court. I mean, it certainly could be, but I just think, again, it's just Monk's play on the floor. It's his lack of attention to detail. He doesn't run back on defense consistently. You know, I already talked about, you know, his offensive knuckleheadedness. I'm going to say that word right now. You know, it's just he's hard to trust. As a coach, I can't even imagine having to have that guy out there in important minutes and trust him to just make the right play and play smart basketball. And I think that's the problem with Kaminsky and Hernan Gomez as well. I mean, that's why we've seen so much of the small ball lineup is because neither one of these backup centers. Now, they both had positive moments. We've seen that. But consistently, they've both been very inconsistent, right? So I will say this, though. I think it's time for Borrego to pick a backup center.
Yes.
You know, I don't know that it's benefiting either one of the players, and it's definitely not benefiting the team. Because, again, we have seen positive moments from both of these guys, Kaminsky and Hernan Gomez, and you got to pick one. You got to allow one of these guys to get solid minutes with Tony Parker on the floor and create some kind of synergy. You just keep flip-flopping. I just don't think it's making this team better.
It has to be Hernan Gomez. I actually don't think there's like a – because of what you said on the pod on episode 83, Spencer, which was Hernan Gomez, for all of the frustrations, especially on the defensive end, he's got some good offensive numbers and he's got some good tools. His cap hit is low. They have his rights. I mean, obviously they do with that some of that applies to Frank, but like – Frank's going to be a free agent this summer. They probably can't bring him back, and they probably shouldn't bring him back. And they've got bigger offseason priorities. And, yeah, like, I just say just figure it out with Hernan Gomez. Just do it. Like,
I agree.
I don't think there's even a choice. But if you want to make it a one versus the other, you can. But it's got to be Willie. It has to be.
I agree 100%. And, you know, to your point – Frank's going into restricted free agency. I would say there's like a 5% chance Charlotte brings him back right now. They'd have to squeeze him all the way down to suffocation, you know, basically dollars-wise. But Willie, I mean, let's look at it real quickly. Willie's got a cap hit next season of shy of $1.6 million. Now, he does have and it's a non-guaranteed deal that has a trigger date of June 28th of this coming summer. So technically, Charlotte could let both of these guys walk into free agency, but that's not happening because of the cap constraints on this roster. How would Charlotte not bring back a center making $1.6 million on a capped out roster? I mean, they're going to bring Willie back. So to your point, Brian, you got to play him. Like, give him a chance to develop. That position's going to stink for you regardless. Mm-hmm. But why you would play a guy like Frank Kaminsky, you know, that you're not bringing back next year over a guy like Willie, who you need to develop and you can re-sign in 2020 for still a very low number, makes very little sense. Unless you're really trying to get Frank some minutes, you're trying to get him some tape, and you're trying to trade him. But I don't think what you can trade him for is worth sacricing Willie's minutes, in my opinion.
I think the biggest thing, we kind of talked about this preseason, we can't overload Marvin with the minutes. I think that with his age, you know, getting up there, sure, he makes the team better with playing him at the five, but I don't know if the minutes, if you keep playing him, you know, 20, I don't know what he's averaging this year, but it's definitely above 20. You keep playing him those minutes more than you probably should, it's going to expend a little bit too much energy on him for being, you know, close to, feels like 50 years old. I mean, he feels like he's been in the league forever. So let's transition.
26 minutes per game for Marvin.
Wow, I was way off. I thought it was going to be closer to 20. You know,
he randomly has these games that happen against the Lakers too, where like I swear this is what knocks it down a little bit. It's like once every like four or five games, it's like he has a game where he plays like it's like Charlotte gets killed and he plays 12 minutes.
Yeah,
like it's like that'll happen too. And I swear that like that like knocks it down at least a couple, you know, a little bit there.
Well, in these minutes he's spending at center are clear, very obviously that's what's driving the average up, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's not stuff he's done in the past. So we thought, I think one of our predictions coming into the season was, like you said, Richie, around 20 minutes, but it's 26 because we're so desperate to get kind of positive value out of a lineup.
He played 38 minutes against the Cavaliers. 38 minutes. I mean that is, and he took 13 shots and he played a lot of those at center. And by the way, like the side note, the Kemba, Lamb, Batum, MKG, Marvin lineup was really good. Plus 8 in 5 minutes, 50% shooting, 6 assists on 7 field goals, 1.13 points per possession. Like it works, especially against bad teams like this. But yeah, they're putting a lot of strain on Marvin Williams.
All right, let's move on. Well, first off, another thing that I noticed in this game, the Hornets came out in a 2-3 zone with about 9 minutes left in the second quarter, but no mention of it on the broadcast. Spencer, you kind of brought that up last time that I guess it was the Knicks that pulled it out against us, and they thought that they were pulling it out for the first time in the third quarter when they had tried it for the whole time in the third quarter. But that's a different conversation for a different day. But we had a
real quickly. I love Eric Collins. He makes it more fun watching the games, right?
Yeah.
I like Del Curry too. But guys, come on. Like, if everybody can see it at home, right? Like, I'm not trying to call anybody out here, but like, you played in the NBA for how many years? A really long time, and was one of the best players in franchise history.
Yeah.
Maybe the
fans want a little bit more than that.
Yeah. Maybe they see the Hornets play defense so often that they don't move their feet, so they don't think that they're in zone sometimes. But there's usually a dead giveaway when there's two guys up front and not moving around with their man. But anyway.
Man, if only the Hornets had someone on their broadcast team that had played and coached basketball at the professional level. If only they didn't have that, obviously. So, but you know, right. At least not now.
If that would have just fallen right into their hands. Yeah, exactly.
Side note, we should, just because it you know, let's not, we don't have to go down a whole alley here, but like, hats off for Stephanie Reddy. She'll be missed on the broadcast. I really enjoyed her work, even in a reduced role, doing the sidelines and pre and post game and some other interviews and stuff. But She was a trooper, and someone who really broke new ground in the profession, and she'll definitely be missed in Hornets land. There's no doubt about that.
Seconded.
So we had a listener ask about the traded player exception, TPE, whatever you want to call it. The Hornets have a, correct me if I'm wrong here, Spencer or Brian, but the Hornets have a $7.8 million TPE from the Dwight Howard trade. And to basically explain how this works, when you have this exception, you can trade for a player up to $7.8 million with that TPE and kind of absorb their salary into your salary without sending out a player. Is that the simplest way to put it?
Correct, yeah. Okay. But you know, the caveat for the Hornets is, you know, you could do that if you were Charlotte. You could take on $7.8 million of salary, but they're only 3.4 under the tax. So it does still count on your books, and you would still have to pay a tax. So remember that cold day in hell analogy we've used before? The Hornets will not be using that full 7.8. So effectively, they can use about 3.4 million of it.
Right. If they wanted to use a portion of it, they could use a portion of it. And they could actually make several transactions using a portion of this TPE. But like Spencer said, highly, highly, highly doubt that you're going to be using the full.
And there's an expiration date on it. You have one full calendar year to use it. If you remember the trade this past summer, it was July 6, 2018. So they have until July 6, 2019 to use that. I actually remember where I was. At a Mexican restaurant in Raleigh enjoying margaritas, and all of a sudden I've got to like bore the girl I'm on a date with so I can dig into my phone and look up, you know, Hornets stuff. So anyways, I guess if anything else you want to add in on the TPE there?
No, I think that's the simplest way to explain it, right? I mean, it sounds more daunting than it really is. Basically, you're allowed to absorb salary without sending out a player using this, you know, this TPE, depending on how much it is, we have right. $7.8 million.
Well, I would add one more thing. So, like, the Hornets do have a few non-guaranteed. Tony Parker's is one of them. Willie Hernan Gomez, we talked about that. There's some player options on the books.
Dwayne Bacon's non-guaranteed for next season too.
He is. Yes. Yeah, he is. So, I mean, there's ways that Charlotte could get closer to being able to use the full $7.8 million of this exception before the deadline date that Brian brought up. It's not likely, but it's possible. And also just a trade this year, right? Like, if the Hornets are able to get off a little bit of a salary, you know, there's a way they could use most of that. And Kupchak brought it up that
at some point
it was a goal to use this trade exception. So I wouldn't just like bury it at the bottom of the priority list for Charlotte. I would expect them to use this somehow, some way before the end of this season. And if they don't before the end of the season, I expect them to use it somehow, some way before it expires in July.
All right, so on that note, I think we should wrap this episode, episode 84. Thanks again for tuning in. Our plan for the next couple of weeks, we plan on recording the 26th of December and then the week of New Year's, barring some major news on the Hornets front, we will be taking off. So again, thanks again for joining us, and please enjoy your holidays. Go ahead, Brian.
Just want to say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to everybody, and thanks for listening in. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do appreciate it. Again, thanks for tuning in. For Brian, for Spencer, I am Richie. Go Hornets.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.